Welcome to the Men of 8 Gang Podcast, episode 230. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
We're rocking it here in South Lakeville.
And Phil Wilson.
That's right, that's right.
And our buddy Graham Thickens is off because, once again, he's helping his bride at some show.
Yeah,
right?
An exotic location.
Some exotic locale, yes.
Yeah, where is he this time?
Probably near a lake, though.
Probably near a lake.
Iowa? I want to say Iowa.
Oh. Iowa? Oh, okay.
Something like that.
We can't keep tabs on him anymore.
Bill's old stomping grounds.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
My hood, as it were. My Iowa hood.
Yeah.
So we were just kind of chatting before the actual music started, because we tend to do that. But Steve had mentioned an article that you saw about... technology destroying jobs.
Yeah, and
which
it's
is an article that's been rewritten for many times, many years.
Well, since. It has, but there are two. This was in the MIT Technology Review, which is a extremely good publication. I mean, they really cover a lot of really interesting things. But it was a professor and his colleague from MIT's Sloan School of Management that talked about. You know, that robots and automation and software is obvious, right? If you're in automotive manufacturing or a travel agent as something that replaces humans. But these guys are claiming that rapid technological change has been destroying jobs faster than it is creating them.
Of course it is.
And, yeah. And you know, and I started to think about just looking at the media space, about how quickly TV stations and radio stations and newspapers and magazines, everything else has been really imploding as technology has been making it more efficient for just fewer organizations to provide us with news.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, there's a lot of examples about things, because it's, I mean, look at how easy it is now to not have a receptionist, you know, to have a voice over IP system like Ring Central or even Uma Business, you know, that box for the home. And you can just set up a company directory and everything else. You don't need a human answering the phone.
I think technology is adding to the issue, but I mean, you look at things like offshoring and things like that, that's robbing, you know, taking away from the median income and the middle class, as it were.
Yeah.
In the US, you know, I think it still comes down to a lot of the, and I, you know, you can take a very jaded view of it, saying, you know, it's all about profit. It's all about lining the pockets of big time CEOs. It's all about driving stock price. And I mean, there are a lot of those factors, but ultimately it comes down to that, you know, part of being an employer is to employ people, is to feed the economy by employing people. That's what I believe. And I think that we kind of lose that in this environment, or you know, this climate that is all about driving the stock price.
Well,
making more dollars for few people. Fewer
yeah,
people.
But Tim, before we got on, you had said if you were making what in back in the 1800s.
Well, no, I was saying that, you know, the wheel back way back in the day.
Well, yeah, yeah.
Basket carrier jobs.
Basket carrier.
So technology has always been taking jobs away. It's just a matter of, you know, are they the kind of jobs that people want to do, and are they ones that are rewarding and both monetarily and otherwise? And, you know, we're at a weird time right now with where technology is, you know, disrupting a lot of industries. And it'll be interesting to see on the other side what, you know, what comes out of it, because we've all lived in a, you know, an older kind of time, and our context is way different than people just coming into the job market today.
Yeah. Well, I even look at my great grandparents. They were in Delano because James J. Hill's Railroad had a town they wanted to start. And so my great great grandparents went there, and then my great grandfather was born. Well, he ended up with a store there. Well, he sold that store in 1896. And they moved to Minneapolis, and it's likely that it happened because already the railroad was downtrending, you know, in terms of the amount of goods and services that were being sent over the rail. And you know, he came to Minneapolis because it was booming and built houses and so forth. And And so it was about opportunity. So the technology of the automobile coming in the early 1900s, I'm sure that didn't slow things down. But
But the auto industry, did a lot of things that took away competition that wouldn't be legal these days. They basically took out all of the mass transit in those cities, because every city, including here in the Twin Cities back in the day, had efficient mass transit, rail. And we're trying to put that back in now. But, they tried to take out their competitors, and it worked. And, if you go to some place like Europe that didn't have the same kind of, forces at play because of the countries and because of World War II, et cetera, they have a much more developed transportation system than we do as a result.
Right.
Yeah. So sometimes business doesn't do the right thing long term, because, obviously they wanted to sell a lot more cars, and they did that. And the auto industry became very successful because of that. But we would be a lot better off, I would say, if we sold fewer cars and kept developing the railroad systems.
No, there's no question. Well, so what happens?
As exemplified by the Who Framed Roger Rabbit plotline.
What?
I haven't seen that movie in a long time.
I haven't either. I've never seen it, actually. Never watched it.
You've never seen it?
No, I've never seen it. Yeah, I don't know why. I had no interest in it. I suppose I should.
It's a
classic.
It's a classic, but it's also very innovative.
Yeah, yeah. Well, okay. So speaking of technology disrupting stuff, so what happens? We just saw that Stratasys here in Eden Prairie is exploding with jobs. They're going to add 125 jobs or something because of the 3D printing boom. And so what happens when, goods and services can be, or not services, but goods can be printed either at a service bureau or at home? I mean, are we eventually going to see the demise of home stores? I mean, is a Pier 1 going to go away because we can just buy something, buy a design online and dump some material into a hopper and then print it out at home?
I don't think so.
Yeah. I think we're a ways off.
3D printing is going to be a long time developing before it becomes really disruptive.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's great for prototyping now. It allows for small runs of things to happen, quickly, but I agree with Tim. It's just a new technology that still has a long way to go.
Well, and to that point, one of the things that I expected by now was when the whole desktop publishing revolution hit and I bought stock in Indigo ePrint and did really well on that. And then we were the first color book to be printed on an Agfa Chroma press here in the Twin Cities. And now here we are in 2013, and I expected that color printers would be a lot further along than they are. We spent $6,000 for a color printer, and it's really a great color printer, but it's still quality wise can't hold a candle to what you can do with an offset press, even a digital press. Mm-hmm. And so maybe 3D is going to go the same way, which, there'll be a point of diminishing returns.
And, oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. That you won't be able to do the same level of quality or sophistication, maybe, or complexity. So,
yeah, because the unit itself will cost too much, so you'll have to run a lot of work through it to amortize it.
Yeah,
it will make sense for the small runs in the house. I don't even think that the ones, the MakerBots that are a couple grand make sense for the house, except if you're a hobbyist and that's what you like to do.
Yeah, or you want to make toys or something.
Right.
Yeah, but I if you're the custom toy guy and you're going to set up shop, I don't know if you're going to do it with a MakerBot. You're going to probably go to a service bureau to do your runs.
I would think so too.
Send it over to have molds made in China and then crank them out.
Yeah. Well, then there are exceptions like, Jay Leno and his Jay Leno's garage has a real high-end Stratasys printer. To make parts and they can use all kinds of different materials, but that thing's got to be, $1 million printer.
Yeah. And it's to support his hobby. You know, so hobbyists, yeah, they'll pay whatever it costs to because it's fun and they've and if they have the money.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's a business.
Well, so printing may not necessarily then disrupt lots of jobs, but what about like that Lyft taxi service or UberX?
Let's I mean, one thing you didn't necessarily mention in Stratasys is that, you know, they are expanding in Eden Prairie and they actually have added jobs and plan on adding more. So now,
but yeah, that's a good point.
Does that balance out the amount of jobs potentially lost because of 3D printing? I don't know. I'm trying to think that what jobs, at least at this particular point, you know, it's basically taking jobs away from those that do, say, injection molding, right?
Well, I don't even think that, because I think that to put to Tim's point,
because I mean, there's not a lot of jobs they're taking away from that industry.
Yeah, so. That it's all prototyping right now. It's just a more efficient way of prototyping, and you'd still take that to an injection molding company for them to make a mold, right, Tim? Don't you think that would be the
I mean, if you were going to produce it in bulk, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So there's the hobbyist market or the Jay Lenos of the world who have millions of dollars to blow on this kind of stuff because it's fun and it supports their hobby of building, you know, parts for their antique cars.
Right, right.
But there's not enough of those people to make that a business. So I think for prototyping new products, it's great, and it will revolutionize the way that products are developed.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, kind of change that. But in the end of the day, when you're going to crank out a million iPhone cases, you're not going to do it on a 3D printer.
No.
Well, if you've got all the time in the world, you are.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess if you're a hobbyist and you've got one anyway, you're gonna write out your iPhone case on it. But
I suppose.
Yeah.
I think what Steve was gonna try to do.
I don't think it's gonna take jobs away from people.
No.
Yeah. I think so. Steve was going to attempt to slide over to, you know, talk about the Lyft and Uber service.
Well, I was gonna segue.
But before we do that, before we segue there, I think that a certain amount of crap needs to be given to Steve for buying a 6-pack of Priuses last week. Did you see his post, Tim, on his Prius purchases?
He only bought two, though.
Yeah, he did. He bought two, but still, who buys two cars in a week?
Well, if you read the post,
your wife says you need to buy her one. You do.
If you read the post, so I had to have a new car, and I've been kind of gearing up for this now for almost a year. And, it came to a head with Alex needing a car. And, I frankly looked for a used car that was halfway decent, but every single one of them had, like, you know, 160,000 miles on it. It was all rusty and stuff. So anyway, bottom line was that 09 Prius got hail damaged horribly, and, we're getting it fixed, but. But,
I was going to say, you gave him a dented up car. Yeah. Jeez. Thanks,
but,
Dad.
But now we so went there and we got this black one and Prius Persona model. And
what's the Persona model? What's in the Persona?
Well, what they did was the only way to get 17-inch wheels on a Prius, which gives it a much nicer ride and better handling,
on them too?
Was to go with the top end model, right? The Prius 5. Well, I didn't want all the Prius 5 crap. And so this Persona model was sitting in the showroom. And it was like, oh my God, I didn't even know the Persona existed. And so one thing led to another, and that's the one I went home with. So on the ride home, Michelle says, you know, I hate to say this, but I'm jealous. And I said, oh. And she had a 2009 Altima. And so I let her drive the thing for a while and we're going around and we're playing with the technology and all that kind of stuff. And she goes, I got to get one of these. And so the bottom line was we went and traded in her Altima and got her a white one.
Do they give you a better price, like a volume deal when you buy?
Do they do that?
No, we got
you should be able to get into fleet pricing at this point.
Well, here's the thing is, they gave her about $400 more on her Altima. So not only did we get the right price, and believe me, I did all the homework. We got the right price on the top end on the Prius. But on the bottom end, they gave us $400 more than we thought they'd give us. So that was a bonus. So she got top top dollar for the trade too. So we're really pleased.
For those of us peasants who can't afford to go out and buy, you know, twofers of cars, there is the start of Lyft and Uber here in the Twin Cities area. Both St. Paul, or is Uber?
No, only St. Paul.
Well, that's because they knew Julio would cover it.
Julio was there,
right? Yeah. Julio's gonna talk about it. So you're gonna get that pink mustache for the front of your Prius now, right?
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, I can't wait.
That would be classy.
I'm sorry. Can't they come up with a little magnetic thing that would go on top of your car? And
well, how about not worrying about it at all? The whole concept is this is a crowdsourced taxi or driver service. Why do you need a pink mustache to say, hey, I'm obnoxious?
Yeah. I thought it was goofy.
But I think, you know, come wintertime, those pink mustaches are going to look like crap. So they'll probably
do something else. Well, yeah. But I liked Julio's post. And for those listening, Julio Ojeda Zapata writes the tech stuff for TwinCities.com, St. Paul Pioneer Press. And he wrote the article about Uber. Now, I've not tried either one of these.
Well, we live in St. Paul.
We don't live in St. Paul, but he went through Uber, and it does seem like Uber would be the one I'd go with too. It's a little more upscale, and he likes the app better. He said the app works better. You can track, you can see where the driver is and how long roughly it's going to take for them to get there.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty cool. And you know what's interesting is there. Go ahead, Tim.
I was going to say, how long is it going to take before the taxi union or whatever goes to City Hall and says, hey, these are unlicensed drivers, it's unsafe, blah, 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 blah.
Well, that's the
tricky part, because it's really not a taxi service. It's a rideshare service connected by an application. Now,
but there's money-changing hands.
Yeah, the fact that there's money-changing hands, there is going to be a little bit of a stink that'll happen.
Well, sure. Here was the operative word in that Lyft article. Kathy Lantry, who's the St. Paul City Council president, said our ordinance haven't quite caught up with the changing face of new products, and this would definitely be a new product. So are they going to probably address that? I think so.
Oh, sure. There's revenue to be made.
Well, because the city sells the medallion, whatever, for the taxis, right?
Right.
So that's a revenue source of the city right there.
Yep.
Well, and
they get taxed for these new entrants, it's still not as much as what they would get from traditional taxis.
Right. Right. Well, so what I thought was really, really fascinating, and I listened to it. I'll put a link in the show notes so people can listen to it online. But National Public Radio had a really fascinating segment on millennials forcing car execs to rethink their business plans. And the tagline or the first paragraph is, there's been sort of a collective freakout in the auto industry about millennials and their waning interest in cars. And you know what? I mean, just about every young person that I know that's, 25 or under, for the most part, really doesn't care about cars. I mean, they literally see them as a tool rather than, oh my God, like, I don't know about you guys, but oh my God, when I was, in my 20s, it was all about having a hot car and, tricking the thing out. And
well, it's about transportation now. And
yeah,
convenience.
It is.
It's not about the status symbol of having a hot car.
Right. Right.
And if you live in an urban area, it's much more cost effective and convenient just to use something like Zipcar.
Well, not only that, but, it fits right in with how everybody is using their mobile devices and it fits right in with that. Well, there's a jet sharing, which I can't afford.
Not yet. Now, because you just bought two Priuses. Yeah.
Well, so what the jet sharing thing is it's the same thing. It's a smartphone app, and you call up the jet, and you actually have to, you have an account in advance, right? And then it'll tell you where it is, and it'll notify you. It'll send you text messages and so on. And you have to be there when the jet shows up, because you have a 10-minute window of opportunity to get on the jet. And if you're not there, it leaves and you get charged anyway. I mean, that's part of the contract. And so if you call the thing,
how many jets are circling around waiting for this? Cause I mean, if you're saying to yourself, okay, I'm in Minneapolis and I need a jet, and you put in there, I need a jet, and the jet's in Des Moines. I mean, what is it? Do you have to drive to Des Moines to get the jet?
No. It comes and gets you. You either have to go to Holman Field in, St. Paul, or, Signature Airways out of Minneapolis, St. Paul Airport, or Flying Cloud Airport. And it'll stop and get you. Yeah. I mean, it's pretty cool.
We've turned some sort of corner here in startup land, where before it was, this is the Twitter or Facebook of, you know, whatever market segment we're targeting. Now it seems like it's the Airbnb of taxis, or the Airbnb of, you know, fractional jet ownership.
Right.
No?
Right.
So we'll see how long this one goes.
Yeah, well, it's going to be interesting to see what, you know, New York already cracked down on Airbnb.
Oh, I know. That's another disruptive thing that gets around a whole bunch of money making things for cities all over the world.
Right. But it's incredibly convenient. I had a buddy whose daughter, much to the chagrin of he and his wife, did couch surfing through Europe. She did it for a whole summer. And she said it was the greatest experience of her life. The people met, the families that she stayed with, you know, and they were, mom and dad were just freaked out about the security.
That would drive me nuts.
Yeah, kidding.
Oh my God.
Well, they are vetted, they say.
Yeah, but that's like having somebody come into your house. Well, they're licensed and bonded. Yeah, and then they steal you blind. And
because it's much, there's much more lucrative, it's much more lucrative to steal from you than be licensed and bonded.
Since we're down a rat hole, Steve, the one thing that I didn't ask you that occurred to me when you were talking about your Prius buying is, do you have to pull more 220 in your garage to charge those things when you have more than one?
No, we didn't do the plug-ins.
I thought you were going to do the plug-ins.
No, well, here's the thing. Well, first of all, you can't get them because they're just nowhere to be found. Because they didn't make that many, because they basically weren't selling them. And here's why. This particular Prius, so far I've averaged 54.5 miles to the gallon. And I've not been driving it any differently than I did my 2009. So it gets better mileage. And the price delta between this one and having a plug-in is about $7,000. And so it's real easy to do the arithmetic and to say, you know, that'll buy a lot of gas, you know, even at $4 a gallon over the life of when, you know, somebody will have this car, it's 5 years, 6 years, whatever. And so, the plug-in hasn't been doing well. Now, supposedly, Toyota is going to have lithium ion batteries in the 2015, and they're going to somehow make plug-in part of the base model or something, or that it's going to be a slight step up. You know, I have no idea. It's all rumors. It's like trying to predict exactly what the iPhone's going to be, even though that's getting a lot easier with all the all the photos and videos that people have been posting. But so we didn't do a plug-in. And I actually looked at a Volt, but the one of the senior VPs for GM in a Q&A after a talk said within 2 years we'll have double the range, on the Volt. And of course, everybody said, "Oh, great! There's GM's Osborne moment." You know, when Osborne predicted or said released
Ozzy Osborne.
No, remember Osborne computer? You don't. Oh. Osborne computer that the CEO Osborne announced that they were going to have this model with these features and was coming out in the fall, and then they slipped it by 3 months, and it basically put the company out of business because nobody bought. At all. I mean, everybody stopped buying because they were waiting for the new model. And so they call it the Osborne effect, which I think is pretty funny. Anyway.
There you go. Okay.
So
what else has happened I always have to play into this, but you know, it is, you know, we're on the eve of the big iOS Apple event, right?
Yep.
So lots of rumors.
Yep.
Tim, I don't know about you, but I've been playing, or Steve, I don't know about you, but I've been playing with iOS 7, obviously, with
you are
and been testing that and the beta version for developers. It's interesting. It's always fun to find flaws and, you know, what's going to happen to some people's apps when iOS 7 kicks in, if they haven't upgraded, but it's kind of fun to see what happens. But we know that iOS 7 is a big part of the event. And we've talked about the phones in the past. Steve, you know, you seem like you'd be a candidate for the champagne colored phone. Is that something you're going to go after?
Well, probably not, because I want a case with a lot of bling. So I've been thinking about those fake rhinestones, you know, get a purple one maybe. And no, I wouldn't. I just get a black one. It's going to be in a case anyway, so who cares?
Well, right. So the 5S is going to have the crazy champagne color?
Yeah, supposedly. That's the rumor.
But then there's the 5C that has like all the traditional Apple colors.
The multicolors, yes.
Yeah. That'll be the less expensive one. And it'll probably have less battery, cheaper camera.
This is all rumor.
Yeah, the part of the 5C rumor that doesn't make sense to me is that it's supposed to be just like the 5, except it comes in a plastic case with colors. So from a differentiation standpoint, you know, that to me, that's not enough. I mean, I could see if the 5C had, you know, the colors and it was the old style, like iPhone 4 size. So it was smaller screen and the camera was crappier. Then you've got enough difference. But it seems like this is going to be a low cost iPhone 5.
Yeah, that's exactly what it seems like. Well,
remember, but it's all rumor and hearsay.
Well, that's except true, though, right? that several sources have, you know, even though it's not clear that Apple and China Mobile signed a deal, Apple's going to be shipping phones to China Mobile, and they're going to be 5Cs. And so that's what everybody said initially with this thing, is that the only way for Apple to really crack the China market was to have a low-cost iPhone, that it was just too expensive. And so I'll put a link in the show notes, but that's why Apple's stock closed nearly $500 because it went back up based on this rumor. Mm-hmm. And there's conjecture that you know, that they potentially could sell 100 million in the first year. And who knows? I mean, I have no basis for that, to believe that or not believe it. But
so what do you think the price is going to be of this 5C to make it compelling? Because right now, let's see, iPhone 5 is what, about $650 if you go into the store and buy it unlocked?
Yeah.
I think it's something like $650. So is it like $400?
Well, it'll depend on how much RAM, how much storage they put in it. So if it's, you know, it's 8 gig only, for example, across the board, you know, they might be able to sell it at $299 for full price.
I bet you it's $399, and it probably will be like an 8 gig model, which is not enough. But you know,
yeah. Well, but is that
enough of a commitment to make it work within the you know, the competitive landscape?
Boy, I don't know.
I don't know what the price is.
If it was $299 or $399, it would be a free phone on contract. Because
but again, this is targeted for other countries, not necessarily for
I know,
the US.
But they're going to drop the 4S and the iPhone 4 from being the cheap phones on the US carriers, and just have this thing as the cheap phone.
Right.
Rumor.
Well, what I'm hoping.
You're not going to have like a regular iPhone 5. It'll be the 5S will be sold new, right? $200. And then this 5C or whatever they end up calling it will be the next thing, and it will probably be free. Won't be $99 because, well, it depends. Maybe they have one that's like 32 gigs or something that is $99.
Well, so the 4S just disappears, goes away. There's no stepping down to the 4S.
Right, correct. Because the problem that they've been having is that the uptake on the 4S and the 4 has been so good, because people look at it and they go, eh, it's good enough, and it's either free or $99. Yeah. That their strategy of last year's phone or 2 years ago phone as the cheap phone, they're getting too good. So they're actually losing sales of their current high-end phones to their old phones, which I guess in the scheme of things is better than losing it to Android or something else.
Yeah.
Right.
But so this 5C disrupts that. So I think they're going to – this whole thing 5C, this doesn't seem right to me because it's like the cheap five one. I know you could say it's color or it's China, but I don't know. Cheap is the thing that comes to mind.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think it's going to be called something else. The iPhone, whatever.
Well, so what do you think about Microsoft then buying Nokia's mobile business? Is that going to get them in the game in a different way?
Well, at least it gets them into the same game that Apple is in. It's total vertical integration.
Right.
I think until Ballmer steps away, it's still a crapshoot no matter what.
Oh, I think this was all planned. So I think that Stephen Elop will be the CEO. Maybe not right away, but he will be the CEO of Microsoft at some point. Sure, soon.
Huh. Well, I'll tell you what. I mean, it's when you look at the dominance that Nokia had for so long, they've got to do something. But how are they going to compete? I mean, this was kind of interesting. When I started to read all these articles about how the world is going to rapidly move to open source because everyone's going to want to look at the code because they're no longer going to trust that closed proprietary software doesn't have a back door in it, especially because of the recent NSA revelations. So with Windows Phone being closed and Android being open, is that just going to accelerate the Android business? And no matter what Microsoft does, they're not going to be able to, gain any significant market share.
Maybe, but they still have a very dominant, strong position in the enterprise.
Right.
So that's still one that's up for grabs now that BlackBerry is sort of on the ropes and looking for someone to buy them. So I wouldn't be surprised if Google, Apple, or Microsoft ended up buying BlackBerry for the patents and for the enterprise server software.
Well, did you see that BlackBerry shipped BlackBerry Messenger so you can download BBM for iOS and Android?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's the last nail in their coffin.
Yeah, no kidding. I just thought, boy, you just gave away your crown jewels.
Yeah, well, it keeps them relevant.
For a week.
For a week. Until next Tuesday.
Until next Tuesday.
And then they're done.
Yeah.
Then it's over, ladies and gentlemen.
That's right. Well, and then
for quite some time.
Be acquired by someone probably before our next podcast.
Who wants to acquire BlackBerry?
Oh, the three companies of this name because of the patent portfolio.
Patents and the customers. They can buy the customers.
Customers. And the server software is also something that with all the resources that Google has and that everybody else, Microsoft, they've not been able to duplicate that thing. I mean, they got close, but it's not exactly the same. So that's the secret sauce of BlackBerry is their server software.
You know what, Tim? I would absolutely agree because the frustrating thing about using Apple's iMessage, for example, is the fact that it's not reliable. I mean, a message can get there in 30 seconds, or it might be 3.5 minutes, or it might be 10 minutes. And with BlackBerry, the messages arrived almost as fast as, a text message through a mobile provider.
Yeah, no, they get messaging and it's very reliable and robust.
It is
secure. So I think there's value there. Their whole devices thing, whoever buys them will kill the devices. So those are all done.
Yeah.
So, but the software will live on in someone's, back end stack somewhere. Maybe it's Apple. Maybe Apple comes out and they buy them. Who knows?
So let me ask you guys this question because you both have Android phones. And so, Android is open and life is wonderful for those that have embraced Android. And so now this Android KitKat comes out, or it's going to be the next version of the OS.
Very tasty.
Okay. And much to the delight of Lisa Grimm, our pal at where is she now? Space 150.
Yes.
She's a huge KitKat fan, so she was gushing about this. She thought this was the coolest thing ever. But
yeah, okay, but it's not going to get her to change from her iPhone.
No. But so let me ask you guys this: so how can people know that their phone is compatible without going to some page and figuring out the specs? Because I mean, I think about, I have a sister. I have one sister without just a traditional phone, one sister with an iPhone, and one sister with an Android phone. And the sister with an Android phone has no clue what to do and how to update and so forth. And how would anybody even know that
press
they're
the update button?
But how would they know if their phone's compatible with the latest?
Yeah, it's you're living in a different world when you're living in the Android world, Steve. It's not like the Apple world where
it's sunnier here.
You buy a phone, and maybe the phone in 2 or 3 years will be running the latest version of the operating system. Probably it will. With Android, you buy it and you might get one upgrade, maybe.
Yeah.
It probably will be a year after they ship that whatever version of the operating system. And it still won't be perfect unless you buy a Nexus. So if you get a Nexus, you get everything. So I've got a Nexus 4 and a Nexus 7. And both of those will get this upgrade to KitKat when it comes out.
Okay.
So that's the only way to assure that you get the latest, greatest. But even a Nexus, you know, because of the specs change, this is probably the end of the line for my upgrades on both of them. I'll have to buy, you know, a new version of those to continue to get the upgrades. The other side of it, though, is that CyanogenMod and other third-party ROMs have been able to use the Android open source project, which is the open source part of Android, to keep their devices running the latest, greatest for longer. So you could always do that, but to do that, you have to go through the trouble of rooting and all that.
On some
handsets, like all the Samsungs and HTCs, it is pretty easy to do it unless you're on Sprint.
Okay.
I'm just kidding. It was hard. Oh. Remember, Phil, on your Evo, that was a real bear to root.
So anyway,
yeah.
It is a different world, and yes, Sprint is a pain in the butt sometimes.
Well, so I'm looking at the page for the Nexus 4, and a 16 gig is $249, and a 8 gig is $199. Why would this phone not just go nuts in China? Or maybe it is.
I think it is, and a lot of other ones like it. The $199 ones, I think those are all sold out. But I have the 16 gig, and I would not get the 8 gig because it's like an iPhone. You can't upgrade it. So what you get is what you get. So 16 is about the minimum for me. And that's still for $249. That's totally unlocked. So you can use it on AT&T or T-Mobile. Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, no subsidy, no nothing. It's just that's what it is. So it's probably the best deal in a phone right now if you just overlook the fact that it doesn't have LTE.
Right. Well, but this would be fabulous for somebody as a second phone if they were traveling.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, just go buy a SIM card somewhere and pop it in and you're good to go.
Yep.
See, that's why, you know, I keep talking to people, especially people that I know that travel a lot. Excuse me. And I try to convince them to stop giving out their mobile number. I said, go with Google Voice, give out that number, because then if you go to Europe, and you pop in a SIM card, just put that phone number underneath your Google Voice number and it'll ring. So you don't have to give out your, you know, here, oh, I'm in France this time. Here's my number. You know, you don't have to try to have people chase you down and figure out where you are.
Plus there's applications that you can get that will use your Google Voice number to do voice over IP.
Oh, yeah.
So you don't even have to have a data, you know, like a phone thing. You can use it over Wi-Fi.
Well, I use that. I use an app called GV Mobile Plus 3. I think it's or 3 Plus or something. And, yeah, you can set it to call over VoIP. So, or, yeah, it's VoIP over an internet connection. So it works great.
So I've got a question for Phil.
Uh-oh.
So are you
prepared.
Are you going to get rid of that Pebble? You're going to eBay that Pebble now that Galaxy Gear smartwatch is out?
No, because I don't have a Galaxy device.
It only works with a Galaxy device?
It only works with a Galaxy device.
Wow, yeah. That's a real flaw.
Are you serious?
Only two Galaxy devices, a Tab and one other. I can't remember else. But no, I mean, eventually, yes, it'll work with the Galaxy 4. But it's not there now. It only works with Galaxy devices. And, you know, a couple of things about the the Gear watch. I think first it's a step in the right direction as far as styling. I mean, to me anyway, it looks a little more stylish. It's a little bigger than the Pebble, but it is, again, it's a little more watch-like in its look and feel. It's more interactive. It's got a color screen. Overall a much more advanced device, but at the same time, it's so incredibly closed right now and sounds like it's going to be riddled with bugs for quite some time. It seems like it was pushed out faster than it needed to be.
It's too big and awkward for me. I can't imagine wearing something like that.
It's a big Dick Tracy sort of a thing. That's for sure.
It's like that. Remember that Casio watch back in the, you know, the 80s or 90s, whenever it came out, the one with the calculator on it.
Yeah.
It reminds me of that. It's that awkward.
Right.
Yeah. It's big. And,
As far as, the camera in the strap, that makes absolutely no sense to me. I don't know.
Yeah, no, they're Samsung has this problem where they
over-feature it.
Features in it, even if it doesn't make sense. Oh, yeah, we have to have a camera in it. Oh, yeah, we have to have it so you can talk on the phone on your watch. Like, what? Who would do that?
I mean, it's not exactly what you would call a privacy sort of a phone call if you're answering it on your watch.
Paired with your Bluetooth headset, maybe that would be okay, but I don't know. The whole thing seems a little weird.
Well, again, I think this was just try to get it out before anything happens at Apple,
right?
Try to get this out before anybody else rolls something out. It's just, you know, again, it only works with the Galaxy Tab and one other of their models right
probably
now.
The Galaxy S4, I'd imagine.
No, not yet.
Oh, that's great.
Well, but here's the issue that I have overall.
It's $300. It's crazy.
Well, not only that, but, you know, virtually no one I know under, let's say, 40 years of age wears a watch.
Right.
I mean, I don't wear a watch because I've got a phone and the time's on my phone. I look at my phone.
I guess the question is, would you wear a watch if it became your phone?
Probably not. Yeah.
Well, I find that I wear my Pebble most when I'm active as far as like using it on when I go for a bike ride. I'll use it because it ties into Map My Ride.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of a thing. But
that makes sense.
And as I've said, I appreciate when I do wear it, I never miss a text or I never miss a call because my phone is muted or something like that.
So, well, see, that would be a bonus because I can't tell you how many times when I've been somewhere and it's been real noisy and somebody sent me a text like my wife saying, well, I'm over here. And, I didn't get it because it, you know, I'm walking and the phone vibrates or it pings and I don't hear it. And absolutely. In those cases, it would be great.
Galaxy Note 3, sorry, is what it works with. Only the Galaxy Note.
Oh, really? Huh.
That's it. So, anyway, it'll be interesting to see. But the camera thing, just I see no use for
something like that.
You know, supposedly,
rumor and hearsay, they're going to come up with something. But will
they announce it this coming week?
I think that's what everybody's waiting to find out.
Yeah,
and
that's
why Samsung obviously pushed this out sooner just in case. But I don't know. We'll see what happens. I don't think Apple's going to rush into the space. I think they may get into it at some point, but it's my view. Of course, who am I to say? I never thought the iPad would take off.
I bet you that they've been working on it for a long time. So it'll be interesting to see. You know, Tim Cook wears a Nike Fuel Band. So you could say that maybe they built in the prototype inside of a thing that looks like a Nike. And he's been wearing it publicly for like.
Ooh, intrigue.
That's a great reveal. Oh, and by the way, I've been using this for nine months and you've been all seeing this, but it's actually.
Very intriguing.
Interesting.
Wouldn't that be funny?
I like the way you think, Tim Elliott. That's I like that.
Well, it could be, but you know. But no one's talking about it. Everyone's talking about the Apple TV getting some sort of update and this and that. But no Apple Watch rumors.
Yeah, there really aren't any. Well, so what do you think is going to happen with our pals at Amazon? Are they going to offer a free smartphone or not?
Probably. If anyone wants a free smartphone. be Amazon.
It was really interesting to see. What the headline I saw, you know, because I use Flipboard and I've got a technology magazine set up. So I got the headline was Amazon to sell free phone. What?
Oh, funny.
I had to keep looking at that headline going, what? So
how funny.
It would certainly be disruptive.
It would be very disruptive. I mean, they're not going to launch their own mobile service. You know, I don't know.
Well, but
no, it'll probably be
there'll be a contract.
Like does. It'll you know, they'll have a GSM version. They'll have a version for the other guys that don't use GSM. Right?
No.
I don't think it'll be free though, unless they, because where does Amazon make the money?
That's what I'm saying. It's like, what, you know, you give it away free.
I could see if it was like $200 maybe or $150, some crazy low price unlocked. I mean, that would be very compelling and a lot of people would buy them.
But see, what I don't understand is why isn't Amazon doing exactly what Google's doing, which is, yes, I know that they're doing the whole Android thing, but with respect to apps, they're slowly but surely and stealthily inserting their apps into iOS. And for those of us who are Gmail users, you know, we're using all kinds of different apps, but they also have their search app. And when it comes up, when it launches, one of the first option is apps, and the second one is voice, and the third one is goggles. So if you touch apps, there's all the apps that you have on your machine, on your smartphone or your iPad. And if you want to click on the web, then it shows all the apps available, you know, Blogger and Picasa Photos, or now just Photos, your calendar, et cetera, et cetera. So you can pull everything up. It's right there at your fingertips. And I can see this getting easier from an interface standpoint. So it's one click instead of two. And I don't see why Amazon doesn't do that. You know, they rather than get in the device space and try to compete at that level, because they're really an e-commerce company. So I don't understand why they don't focus on the app side and making an Amazon storefront that's the be all end all.
Well, they do. They've already done that.
Yeah, no, I know, you know, and then there's the Kindle app and all that, but they're all separate. You know, but focus on the Amazon experience overall. I will tell you that if you have an iPad and you go and download the B&H Photo Video, the New York-based company, download their catalog, their app. It is, and I'll put a link in the show notes, it is the best experience I've ever had with any e-commerce app, even a web app. It's fabulous. And that's kind of what I would love to have for Amazon, because I think Amazon's kind of visually noisy. There's a lot of stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
But
well, there is a lot of stuff going on, but I think that goes on because people are actually clicking on that stuff. So moving around that space. So I would imagine they do a fair amount of user experience testing. So
one would
hope. Listen, we're running short on time, but Steve, you wanted to mention that Khaki Fitz has been sent off or over something to you that you had.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention. I just wanted to mention that the executive MBA students, including Khaki Fitzsimmons, did a case study on what to do to fix Best Buy, and when I really read through it, I was realizing that based on what Hubert Joly has talked about and the people that he's appointed and so forth. It's pretty clear that they're moving forward on a lot of the things that the students also looked at and said, hey, we've got to fix this.
Yeah. Except for the alliance with Amazon. They're not looking at that.
No, not at all. In fact, what's interesting is that was looked upon as one of the biggest mistakes Target made was to get in bed with Amazon and stay there. They should have developed their own immediately.
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
Yep.
But so would you give it a read, Steve or Tim? What did you think?
No, obviously this was written a while back. So, with the benefit of seeing what has happened since the turnaround started, there are a few things that I would probably have thought of even at the time. And I think we probably even talked about it, which is to kind of focus on the service angle, which is touched on here. And it's something that I think that Jolie is really doing almost behind the scenes, where Geek Squad is integrated more in the stores and they have more of a Apple Genius Bar-y kind of a feel to it. But there's stuff that they're doing with small to medium business as well using Geek Squad that is a way for Best Buy to do stuff that their competitors can't do. But well taken that they need to obviously improve their online experience, and that's something that they've been trying to do. They've still got a ways to go, but they're making headway, and that was one of the major recommendations here in this paper.
Yeah,
good stuff, and always good to see Toe's Matrix used. I always liked to use Toe's back when I was in graduate school, way back in the day.
And the difference between Toe's and SWAT is?
Well, you do, it's the same sort of thing mixed up, obviously the same sort of analysis, but with Toe's you do both internal and external analysis of your competitors and what the threats are and so forth, which you really don't do with SWAT. SWAT is more of an internal tool.
Gotcha.
So they did both here, but Toe's I think is more, if you're in a situation like Best Buy has been in, that's probably a better tool to use to evaluate what you should do than SWAT is.
Right.
Yeah.
But using both, you can't go wrong using both.
Yep. Say, I wanted to just throw in one more thing before we sign off here, and that was the announcement that if this, then that, the IFTTT site, IFTTT site, adds SmartThings as a trigger. And so you can use if this, then that to interact with your smart home hub or SmartThings hub and devices. And I thought about this for a while, and I thought, if I was at SmartThings, I'd see this as a big threat because I wouldn't want people to be able to create essentially front-end applications to drive SmartThings hub and devices. I'd want them to do that themselves. Actually, I've been looking at this a lot and thinking about this as I've been goofing with SmartThings. That really what I want is I want a flowchart type metaphor, a drag and drop thing on the web page to be able to say, okay, if this, if it's this time, then turn these lights on and then turn them off at this time. And then do this and do that and yada, 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 but have it be all visual. Because you can do a lot of that kind of thing with if this, then that. So do you guys see that as a threat?
No, I don't see it at all. I see it as
something additive
that adds value to the SmartThings hub.
Yeah, okay.
Because their whole thing is to have this glue in the middle of all these weird standards that are really not standards. They're all this, a bunch of protocols.
Right.
And their device is the thing that acts as the Babel fish of all of that.
Yeah, yeah. All right, you got to put a link to an explanation of Babel fish or Babel fish, however you want to pronounce it, for people that don't know.
I'm already Googling.
Really? You haven't read The Hitchhiker's Guide? No?
Yeah. I haven't.
And I saw the movie. Guide.
No, I haven't read Hitchhikers, and I haven't seen the movie. It is on my list of things to do.
But, well, I have a gold tinged leather copy of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Oh my! Yeah. I figured it'd classic. Be wrapped in a towel of some kind. No.
Oh God!
See, I know enough about Hitchhiker's Guide to explain the naming of Code 42 software, but that's about it.
Okay. All right.
That's a spoiler. Come on. That's the spoiler.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Spoiler alert. I don't know.
Okay. Well,
what's coming up as far as events? Anything new to the calendar, kids?
I added a bunch of stuff.
Yeah. Oh, you sure did.
So, well, then let's just talk about what's happening. Investors, fundraising in the digital economy. Is that new?
No, that was in last week, but
that was, okay, sorry.
The Minnesota Developers Conference. What's that all about?
Minnesota developers getting together for a conference.
Yeah, that was in. That's been in for a while too.
Yeah.
MDC.
So it's more of a enterprisey kind of a thing, I think. You know, it's .NET and JavaScript.
Right.
Blah blah blah. So it's more, and it's, you know, it's fairly heavy. But I guess, you know, if you're a back end developer, you know, 2.25, probably. Well, you get your employer to pony up your, you know, the attendance fee. Then and you get breakfast, lunch, and snacks.
There you go.
Yeah.
Then you get Startup Weekend, which is slated for the 25th through 27th of October.
Yeah.
What else did you add that was new?
I put in Ed Jam as well.
Ed Jam. That's right.
Which is on the 7th, October 17th through 19th, which is sort of like a hackathon for educators.
Mm-hmm.
And I failed to put in MobCon.
Right.
2013, that's November 7th and 8th. I'll put that in.
Right.
That's quite a ways out. But.
And CodeCamp 15 is on the 19th of October. And I put that in, which is new.
Great.
Nice.
Good.
Well, there's all sorts of stuff going on this week, and we'll talk about it next time we talk to you on
the Minivate Gang podcast. Take care, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Have a good week.
Break the night, 'cause you're going, oh, you're going down.